horse racing, handicapping, interviews. This is At the Races with Steve Beck.
From Churchill Downs, a very good Thursday and a very good opening day for Belmont and for Lone Star Park. Don't want to forget Lone Star today. And Belmont, a little bit of our focus. And we'll talk, actually, to Dave Grenig in about 15 minutes from Belmont, where it is absolutely freezing. So much for in like a lion, out like a lamb at least around Long Island. We're craziness. I mean, in the 30s, and not ideal way to kick off the season at Belmont. I didn't check the weather in Dallas. We'll talk to Brandon Lee, though, at Lone Star. It's their 25th anniversary. You can tell they're excited. They've done some publicity work, and they've got a nice stakes schedule lined up. And Brandon, of course, handles all the contest action. So we'll get a little bit of a peek at what's ahead at Grand Prairie Lone Star Park today. So both Belmont and Lone Star kicking off the seasons. Dave Grenig in, as I said, 15 minutes. And there's quite a few things to do with Dave that are not just Belmont opening related. Dave on his way here, of course, and monitoring what's gone on mostly with early voting and a couple of other potential classic participants for later in the spring. I saw Dave's piece that talked about Safi Joseph, who's going to have 12 or 14 or 16, I think 16 horses stabled at Belmont, and notably Skippy Longstocking, whose record actually, his numbers are included in the Thoroughgraph package, and he's okay, Skippy Longstocking. Looks like they're Preakness bound. They're thinking about the Peter Pan as well, but Safi Joseph looking more for two turns. So we'll talk to Dave. We'll get the latest on Chad Brown's thought process. They continue to monitor. We'll talk in a minute about the morning. A very subdued, quiet morning here in terms of the Oaks and Derby training session. Very relaxed, and just a lot of easy gallopers. A couple were a little more, sprightly than others. We'll get into that. I've got some of the results from yesterday to touch on as well. Indianapolis and horseshoe action, as well as Keeneland. Keeneland down to 2 days, of course, of racing. And we'll look at what both Gus and Seth, they both had a couple of ideas I'll touch on that in a second. I'll get back. I have no reason to launch into it right this minute. Gary Palmisano is going to be here. Gary on his way over from the backstretch. I want to get G-Pal in. And if you didn't see it yesterday, Churchill with a couple of press releases that you got a little bit of a window into on Monday from Darren Rogers involving this reimagined paddock. I don't know if you saw the artist if you saw the artist rendering. It's just crazy. I mean, they're just constantly. You know, it was one thing. It's one thing to put in, various seating and some things that they've done in various underutilized areas of the racetrack and of the building proper. But what they're going to do to this paddock, it's amazing. It could be. I don't think there's any place that, at least in North America, that is going to have what this appears to have, which is, in fact, accommodations ringing the paddock, windows overlooking the paddock, with all the work, the really it's a decade plus that has gone into it. It's just going to be a completely different configuration with those gates that were put up, and they're basically going to take the paddock and turn it around and put it back up against the building and build out to it. And so, you know, the long-standing racing office, horseman's lounge, and so forth, that, you know, has been there as long as I think most of us can remember. I mean, in black and white photographs, it's there. This is going to be completely different. It's really quite something. I started coming here. First time I came here was 99. First Derby was 2001. So I was familiar with and actually worked in various areas of the old building doing the barbecue. And it's completely, by the time this thing is done, it's just a different place. It's just a whole different Churchill Downs, essentially. So if you didn't see the pictures, seek those out. You can get a feel for what it's going to look like. The other press release and why I want to get Gary in here, I actually got a couple of questions for Gary because the Churchill Downs Racing Club, which had, you know, really was the template for other racing clubs around the game. You know, they had the incredible success with Warriors Club and with Lucas, and I don't know if they've gone on with the racing club. I want to ask Gary about that. But number one priority for those of us that are already thinking about how to structure wagers, the wagering menu took some new dimension a little bit with the addition of a three-year-old pick three. And Churchill, the latest to latch on to the $3 increment pick three. And this will be a pick three that will feature the Derby, the Pat Day Mile, and the whatever, what is the current bourbon sponsor of the American Turf? There's a constant tinkering with the, you know, there was Crown Royal for a while, right? And who among us doesn't have at least one purple velveteen Crown Royal sack, right? Somewhere in and around your bar area. Some people put, you know, you could put nice rare coins in, or you know, if you collect, you know, who knows what. It's always good for something. Paraphernalia for those. But I've got a couple. I was more a VO drinker or a Canadian club, but the occasional Crown Royal made its way onto the bar. Right now, it doesn't look like there is a sponsor. I think they're just calling it the American Turf. And so the Pat Day Mile, the American Turf, and the Derby will be a $3 pick three. And that, you know, a nice addition. And there's also going to be an all-dirt stakes pick five. And that'll be the Knicks go, and the Philly and Mayor Distaff, the Derby City Distaff, the Churchill Downs Sprint, the Pat Day, and the Derby. So that's another added wrinkle. And then, you know, there's everything else, and we always go over it. We always go over the wagering menu with Gary. All right, so we'll do that. And what else? Then some of the regulars. We've got Joe Clancy swinging through at 10:30. We'll check in with Joe. It's a big jump weekend, and we'll look at that with Joe and see. I talked to him yesterday. He said, you know, he's still kind of just monitoring. He hasn't done any deep dives yet on Derby. Speaking of deep dives, Jay Pribman. Jay has a pace piece that is well worth taking a look at. And it features and discusses a conversation that he had clearly with Dick Girardi. And it's kind of interesting. And you know, talking about the, and it's actually based on the very similar timing splits that I have written about in terms of, you know, sub 48 half miles, opening half miles, and, you know, what the cutoff point is for a moderate derby pace versus a hot derby pace. And so I would recommend that from Jay. In fact, I started this morning to tweet it, and I thought it was a little too early, so I thought I would talk about it and then send out the tweet. And, of course, Jay, I think Jay arrives tomorrow, as does Dave Grenig. And we're going to talk, actually, we'll talk to Dave here in just a couple of minutes, about 4 minutes. So I would recommend that piece from Priv, all right? A couple of news pieces before we bring Dave Grenig in. And that actually, well, it's not a story that Dave necessarily, yeah, I think it's a piece that, Matt Hegarty wrote. Yesterday, the hearing officer, the retired court officer, the justice that served as the hearing officer in the hearing, essentially, that Baffert's legal team and Naira presented. This goes back, now it's probably 6 weeks ago, at least. And, you know, that was like a three-day hearing. He's come back with a recommendation of a, quote-unquote, lengthy suspension from New York Racing, and a period of 2 years. That's his recommendation, and it goes to a panel that will then consider. Baffert's legal team and Naira both have a couple of weeks to respond, and then there'll be another 10 days to consider the responses and the judge's recommendation, and go from there. So these just don't end between the legal wranglings. So we'll see what this outcome may be, because you're looking at, let's see, 2 more weeks and then another 10 days. So you're talking essentially another month. So that'll put us squarely in front of the Belmont Stakes. So the headlines write themselves. Yeah, there you go. we're gonna bring Grenig in here, Case. Let's reach for Dave and get him right on time, which is a rarity around here. I do see our man G-Pal is on site. Gary Palmisano Jr. And he's got this year's Derby fleece. It looks like very sharp. All right, I may have to put an arm on you.
We'll get you some swag.
Well, it's not like I'm prospecting for it. A certain person who's no longer here actually, as compensation for doing the post draw shows, and I wanted one for, I he said, you know, so I said I would like something for Tina, and then that person is gone, so I there's nobody to reach out to, but I got you here, so. I was having a laugh about this the other day with Darren and KK the other day. I hear Dave Grenig in the background, and Dave, I thought the winter racing season was over.
Not quite. Mother Nature likes to play. It's not nice to fool with Mother Nature. I don't get it. Global climate change, whatever you want to call it. I'm putting my vote in for a big two thumbs down.
I heard windy and freezing cold.
It's cold. I don't know about it. It's freezing cold because it's April 28th, and you're like, really? But it's, I mean, you know, it's not bone-chilling cold. But it's, it's 10 degrees colder at Belmont than it is at any other place in Long Island, and it's just like Aqueduct. It's 10 degrees colder, or even on a good day, it's 10 degrees colder at Aqueduct than it is anywhere else in Queens. So, you know, yeah, you got to factor. There's wind chill, and there's Belmont chill factor. So.
I'm anxious to hear what Andy Serling has to say about it.
I'm sure he'll be... He hasn't, put it in his summer home already. I'm guessing that the winter hat will be on display on the TV today.
And gloves. He'll have gloves.
Gloves. And they'll have the hockey puck to keep all the paperwork done.
It's unbelievable. There are some fun stories that kick off the season, Dave, and you touched on them in really all your advanced work. Of course, you're headed here for tomorrow for Derby, but the arena, the UBS Arena, there are hockey games scheduled tonight and tomorrow. And are your kids? Your kids are too old for Sesame Street Live.
Yes, too old for Sesame Street Live. But who doesn't like a good Big Bird and Oscar the Grouch show? I mean, come on.
Very true.
You know what? You know what would be great? How about Big Bird and Oscar the Grouch doing Talking Horses one of those days?
That actually is funny, and that you should absolutely talk to the marketing department. That actually would be pretty cute.
That would be good, or maybe we already have them. I'm not sure.
Hey now, Dave. How about some of the thoughts there? I noted that from your piece, a John Mayer concert the night of Derby, and as a simulcast day, Belmont will be active, obviously, on May 7th. That'll be interesting. I'm really eager to see how this all plays out and how much interplay there is between the building and the racing side.
Yeah, I think this year it's going to be light on that front. There's just not enough yet, obviously, amenities to come to Belmont and then like hang out and then go. If you're a racing fan and you're going to go see John Mayer, look, you watch the Kentucky Derby at Belmont and then you just walk. You walk 25 feet and you're in the arena. That's all well and good. The issue I think they're going to have is the weekend of the 14th and 15th with the aforementioned Sesame Street shows, when you have three shows of people coming in and going out. And then, the 14th is a fairly big day here with Peter Pan Day, and you've got Man of War. It's a significant card on the 14th, so that's going to be a bit of a hassle. Most of the other events, though, happen sort of after the after the races. We just don't get that large crowd here at Belmont anymore. We're not going to get like 25,000 here on opening day. I'm sure you'll get some crossover, a few people coming to the game tonight that might catch the last few races. And the other thing is, there is a parking garage, a nice, big, beautiful parking garage across the street. It's just not open yet. What I was told is they don't want to open it until it's 100% functional, and I guess it's like 94% functional, and it'll probably be ready next week after the season's over. But it'll still be functional use for the arena, and that should alleviate some of the parking issues that fans will find when they come to for the races. Now, the other good thing, I guess, is if you're coming for an event aside from those late morning afternoon shows, if you're coming to the races and there's an event at night, I'm here first. My car is parked here. So, it's not like you're going to get, like, if you come for Derby Day and there's the racing fan have the first chance to park versus the John Mayer concert goer.
The elements of this also, and one of the big concerns and one of the big geschreis that went up when all this came down was you know, the annexing of a significant portion of the backyard, Dave. And, you know, I've seen the pictures of, you know, what is going to be, you know, kind of a reimagining of the backyard. And this is going to be an ongoing process that'll, you know, also include the renovation of Belmont itself, you know, plus the, you know, long-term utilization of the infield as well. So address that a little bit. I saw the quotes from Glenn Kozak in your piece on this.
Yeah, I think what you'll find to start, so I think half of the backyard will be in usage starting today. And I have seen, you know, I haven't posted them, but I have pictures of what it looked like on Sunday, which was just a dirt mound and a gravel pit. And then I was there yesterday, and the gravel has been paved. You know, it's all paved, and new grass or new sod has been put down in a significant section of what's left of the backyard. And I think there'll be ample space for people to congregate back there. Now, the negative part is what Naira announced last week, when you can't bring your coolers and, you know, bring your beers in. So that's a negative, and no question. And then as the meet progresses, I think you'll see there's another section behind the paddock and behind the administrative offices where that marquee tent used to be, which is no longer there. That'll be replaced by sport turf, I guess artificial turf, if you will. And yeah, there'll be probably more picnic areas and more, you know, more picnic tables and maybe some open space there. So I think you'll have a functional backyard at some point during this meet, probably around Belmont Stakes Day, so maybe a month into it, maybe even Memorial Day weekend. It's just, as you say, it's a work in progress that I think will be better than people think initially, aside from the fact that you just can't bring, you know, your beers and your coolers, and I think that will be a bit of a negative. But as Glenn said, look, there's enough space. If you want to come to Belmont Park, there's enough space for you at Belmont Park. It's a 1,000,003-square-foot building, at least right now as it stands. If you want to come to Belmont, there would be ample space for you to come.
Regarding the cooler thing, because I know people, you know, people were frustrated about that, and of course they immediately equated that piece of news with you know, Saratoga, how it feels like you can't get out in front of Saratoga without people making assumptions that they're not going to be able to bring their own food and drink in. But people can bring personal coolers. They just can't bring the big rolly coolers.
Correct. But, I mean, you bring, like, those sort of cooler giveaways, right?
Yeah, the six-pack, the little six-pack coolers.
Correct. But, you know, and I don't know how strongly they're going to police it. I mean, I guess, you know, if you want to put a Coca-Cola wrapper over a Coors Light, I guess you can do that. You know, I don't know that they're going to have the alcohol police out there. I'm not condoning it. I'm just telling you that you know, there's certain things that you could probably do to make your day a little more enjoyable. But yeah, you can bring sort of the smaller coolers, like you say, the personal size coolers back there.
There you go. In terms of the racing schedule, and you alluded to a few things, and of course, you know, the highlight of any Belmont Spring Meet, the Belmont Stakes, and Saturday, June 11th, of course, and everything that comes with it, and actually everything that comes with, you know, the now multi-day, you know, Thursday, Friday, Saturday. They've really, you know, gone, you know, made a real effort to, you know, to have a multi-day racing festival approach, and probably a good time to introduce, Dave, the return of Frank Gabriel to Naira, and also the tidbit that was in your piece that Keith Thoskill, now the year-round racing secretary.
Yeah, so Frank came back to replace Martin Panza, who left at the end of the Belmont Fall Meet, and Frank came on board in February, sort of got a seat wet during Aqueduct, and, you know, is now in that, you know, well entrenched in that role now moving forward at Belmont. The decision's been made to have, you know, when Martin came in, it was sort of a three-headed monster in terms of a racing secretary. We had one for Aqueduct, one for Belmont, one for Saratoga, that type of thing. Now it's strictly Keith is in charge now for the whole three tracks, which is probably good. I mean, look, we, you know, I'll show my age here. Back in the day when we ran 250 days and 6 days a week for most of the season, we had one racing secretary. And then when we reduced days, somehow we thought it was a good idea to have three. But now we're back to one. So you got a little bit of a continuity scenario there. And then Frank, you know, I think Frank's just sort of overseeing and sort of directing and, you know, grooming the racing office as we, you know, as we move forward. And, you know, Frank does have a lot of experience, both stateside and internationally, and hopefully he can help continue what has been a large European participation in our grass stakes from Europe in both Belmont and Saratoga. Now, the one issue that I think they've had before and will have now and will have continuously is you do go up a bit against Ascot. So you're not going to get the creme of the creme from there because they're concentrating on Ascot. But as we've seen, their second and third string horses come over here and do quite well. And I think that will continue.
I did, you know, Andy with us on Tuesday, and he mentioned Yabir, who is actually... I think, is he running? He's running
Friday. I think he's running
Friday,
tomorrow.
Yeah. Yes.
Yeah, that's the plan. Yabir is supposed to run there and then come here for the Man of War. Obviously, you don't want to count, you don't want to assume that he's just going to run great tomorrow and then come here. So I guess we need to see how he runs tomorrow and then go forward from there. But the plan is for him to come. Look, Charlie Appleby did quite well with his Godolphin contingent last year, not only just here at Belmont and Saratoga, but he went to Canada and won. And he did quite well at the Breeders' Cup, so I don't anticipate him, you know, doing less. I would think he would do the same if he has the stock and more, if not more, throughout the summer. And there's no, you know, they love, you know, he loved it here. He did quite well here.
Speaking of arrivals and you know, some comings and goings, it is notable that that jockey colony, the addition of Flavian Pratt is certainly going to be impactful. Johnny is back, as is Joel Rosario, and you know, then there's the cream of the winter season as well. Pretty nice, heady jocks colony starting out the season.
Yeah, you'll get a little I think you'll get a little taste of that later this afternoon when you see the Sunday overnight, because it seems like what I've been told, a lot of these guys are riding Churchill. Okay, they finish out Keeneland Friday, Churchill opening night Saturday. I think they're all getting on a plane Sunday morning coming here to ride. I think you'll see a lot of those names, Pratt, or both Ortiz's, Rosario, and the such for Sunday. So you get a little taste of that. Then they go back to Kentucky for Derby week, and then starting May 8th, you'll see that here. And I do think it opens up, Steve, some opportunities to cash some tickets on some good riders who will be riding some long shot prices, and most notably Trevor McCarthy to me, because there's a guy that he just really to me improved from last year to this year. He really studies where to be, what's the best part of the track to be on, and he gives you 110% effort, and I've just been really impressed with him throughout the winter into the spring. You know, and I got to think that he's going to be on a lot of live long shots. And you could make a case that if you just bet Trevor across the board throughout most of this meet, that you will make money. Because I know he's going to pop with some $40 horses. I just know it.
Well, and I brought this up with Mig on Monday. You know, you had the very unusual parallels at Aqueduct on Saturday and Sunday with those two New York Stallion Series races and the two Chad Brown winners, but particularly with Trevor sweeping those two, upsetting, you know, 3 to 5 shots, 2 to 5 shots.
Yeah, well, Yokuz, I think, was 1 to 5. And, yeah. You know, that horse just broke. I actually liked
Kazmike
a little bit.
Kazmike
on Friday, Saturday, when he beat Baris. I like Baris in the race. How could you not? But there was the one caveat of the wheeling back in short, you know, the short rest, and he did prove a bit vulnerable there. And I thought that if there was some vulnerability, I thought that horse was the right one. So that was a nice $20 horse. And then the next day, I don't know that I could have made a strong case for Galaxina, even if you didn't like Yokuz, which I'm not sure how you couldn't, but there was the one caveat there, that rail, if she didn't break, She had the rail. She stumbled a stride or two out of the gate, and that blew her chances. I still don't know that I would have landed on Galaxita, but there's another example of Trevor just giving a really smart, heady ride and, you know, and scoring out on a $50 horse. And I'm telling you, that will happen at some point in the next 44 racing days here.
Well, hopefully the surface switch on the main track from Aqueduct to Belmont, hopefully we get a nice even. I mean, Belmont is notoriously speed favoring as well, but the gold rail situation at Aqueduct down the later stages of the season was really kind of maddening.
Yeah, it was. My thing about speed is I think speed is always good. I don't care what track you're at. But yeah, the inside was a bit pronounced, and it was a little bit maddening for handicappers, no doubt. But I'm always, you know, speed is always good speed in racing. If you're fast early, there's a pretty good chance you'll still be there at the end or close to it.
Well, and speaking of the end as well, and Aqueduct yesterday, you had the final numbers. You did the kind of the meet survey numbers. Not a bad winter, but. What was the final? I'm just looking at the final stats here now.
Well, that was the spring meet numbers. They think they did 115 million, average about 7.7-ish and change,
yeah.
Something like that. And it was, you know, the average was about flat from last year. You know, it was only 11 days last year. It was 15. They were able to get 37 of 43 scheduled turf races on the grass, which always helped. March / early April is still a tough time from a, you know, getting horses back. This isn't the old days where horses came right back from Gulfstream, which used to end in mid-March. Gulfstream now ends in April. If it doesn't, actually, Gulfstream never ends. It goes year-round, and then Keeneland with their insanely high purses, it's tough to get guys to come back here. So I thought they acquitted themselves pretty well for that meet. Basically, it was in April, you know, three-and-a-half-week meet.
Well, we get started today, and you promptly blow out of town. What you're tracking, right?
You know, when the schedule came out, when the hockey schedule came out, tonight was supposed to be the last game, and I figured I'd catch the opening day at Belmont through the Belmont Islander doubleheader, and then go out on Friday. It turns out that tomorrow is now with some of the stuff that happened earlier in the season. They had a I will make the short walk over from the press box to the arena for the early game tonight, 7 o'clock. I think we end around 5:30, and then puck drop is like 7:05.
How many games have you seen? A few games already over there.
Oh yeah. I actually went up. My son, he went against the family. Don't go against the family, but he did. He went against this Rangers fan. So I got him tickets for his birthday, and we went to about half the game. Half of the home game, roughly.
How's the arena? I mean, I talk about the
way... It's a really nice arena. It was well done. It's really nice. Hopefully, there can be some sort of marriage. When Belmont is redone, hopefully there could be between Belmont and the arena maybe some type of sports bar or some type of place where people can hang out and have a reason to come and just hang out, either bet or play or whatever it is. You know, something like a Dave and Buster's / sports betting hall would be great, like at the western end of the grandstand there / into the Belmont, you know, to the arena, if they could come up with something like that. Where you can still bring kids to play Dave and Buster's, or the adults can just stay in, like, you know, a simulcast / sports betting type thing. And I think it would, like, a football Sundays would be huge there, I think, if you
that's true.
You know, if they could do something like that. I don't know what's in the works. I don't know what goes into all that. But to me, if they could do something like that, I think it would be a place that people would go to.
Dave, right now, of course, in addition to getting ready for the spring meet, you're tracking the Chad Brown camp and early voting. I saw the piece about Saffy Joseph and a 16-head barn there, and including Skippy Longstocking, who seems seems ticketed for the Preakness. Talk a little bit about the Derby preparations, and you know, Chad, I'm sure will be here for any of Zandon's next. They've got another work for Zandon coming up, but some thoughts about what's going into that decision. It sure feels like they're 85% likely to bypass Derby for Preakness.
Yeah, I think I'm looking at it this way. Something significant would have to happen. A significant horse would have to come out for them to change their mind. I don't necessarily, and it's not a question of, oh, there's too much pace in there and my horse is the front runner. I think they feel that they'd be fine tracking a horse or two. I don't think they necessarily view this horse as has to be, he has to be loose on the lead type of thing. And then we're talking early voting here. I just think it's more, there's a couple of horses he won't, he doesn't want to go on record and name them, but there's a couple of horses I think he's interested to see if they show up in either here, or do they come fresh into the Preakness, and would I rather take on that horse after he'd run in the Derby and then run in the Preakness, or just if that horse is going to go fresh into the Preakness, maybe I'll pivot to the Derby. But if the field stays as is and most of the, and all the big names stay, I think you'll definitely see him stay here in New York, prepare for the Preakness, which then the Pioneer of Medina, they'll be back in race. So I think it'll have to be something significant to happen in the next 48 to 72 hours for them to change plans.
Well, and I would imagine part of that would be this morning's Taba work that Tim Yakteen yesterday promised a stiff 6-furlong breeze for Taba, and waiting and watching, and that'll turn up a little bit later in the morning, and any reaction to it. In fact, maybe we can even get Gary Young's, who undoubtedly is on hand. We can get Gary's reaction. So I think he's the key, and certainly for Zandon, Dave, the presence of Classic Causeway provides Jeff Drown and Chad with exactly the kind of pace setter they were hoping for.
Yeah, look, to me, I think the key with Zandon, who I do like, is the break and getting some sort of position, because I just don't think you want to be 13th, 14th coming under the line the first time. It just hasn't been a successful approach to winning the Kentucky Derby for since we went to the point system, being the main exception there. So I really think his chances, whether it's Classic Causeway in this, someone's going to be on the lead, someone's going to be going quick enough. I just think it's how he breaks and how they're able to get position going in, coming under the line the first time is really, to me, the key. Obviously, it's the key to a lot of horses, but that's a supremely talented horse who I just think, in order to have his best chance, he needs to be in the, I wouldn't want to see him any worse than 8th or 9th going under the wire the first time, and even that might be a stretch.
Are you when we look at the DRF selection grid, is Zandon, have you grafted on?
I haven't made a final decision yet, because I would just like to see where horses are drawn, and not so much more to me who they're next to than exactly where they are.
Right.
It's funny, I happened to turn on the Big Brown the other day. He had post 20. What a trip that horse had. That horse, how much the best was that horse? He was 4-5 wide every step until he turned for home, and he just left everybody. People should go back and watch that race. That was really impressive, that horse. I don't know, it's been a while since I watched it, and I was just like, wow, that fourth lifetime start. He goes up there and says, I'm taking post 20, and he just galloped. That was really impressive. I had to watch that. I'll probably watch it again before next week too.
I love it. The other, you know, the other New York considerations. I mean, everybody's here. Todd, you know, the Todd group. They're out early every single morning. I had Suge on the other day as well, from Belmont, and with Kathleen O. Any other thoughts from the New York horses that and New York horsemen that you've been interacting with?
Look, you know, maybe this is finally the year where the wood has a little bit more of a bearing on things than it has in the past 20 years. Not saying Mo Donegal is going to win, but because I do think he's the type of horse that he's going to have to get an absolutely dream trip to get there. But I think he is very talented. He'll probably be the only one, I guess, from that race to show up. But you know, he's a legit talent. Kathleen O, I don't know. I did not hear your interview with Chug, but in talking to him, I really get the impression he's very confident in how this horse is doing, and how she will do at Churchill Downs in that configuration. You know, you got to give there's two ways to look at her from Gulfstream, in my opinion. One is, well, she really just beat up on a really weak group of horses, but she also did it with a style that isn't necessarily conducive for success on that track. And she had success three times, with each race probably a little bit better than the previous one. So I think going a little bit longer, going on a track that would seem to be a little bit fairer to her style with that stretch, just I think is what's giving him the confidence going into what looks like a very solid rendition of the Kentucky Oaks.
Dave Grenig, everybody, DRF Grenig, opening day at beautiful Belmont Park. And Dave, I appreciate this. Can't wait to see you here. And this is it. Once we get this close, the classic season, the next 6 weeks essentially should be great. And the season at Belmont through early July before we head north. Everything seems in place for a very good spring, as soon as the temperatures get above 40.
Yes, I think we're going to call it today breezy Belmont Park. It's beautiful, but a beautiful breezy Belmont Park. The wind just kicked up as we were concluding here.
Dave, safe travels. I appreciate it, and I'll see you tomorrow. But we'll talk Derby week as well.
Sounds good, Steve. Take care.
Dave Grenig, everybody, and there's the Belmont picture getting started today. We're involved. We're in the fifth today with Scherzando. It's a tough group, but he seems to be circling back to a good effort. And Gary was on with me yesterday, Siaka, and because there was a dirt race for Saturday, and he said, "What do you think?" He said, "This is tough," and the dirt race actually probably came up a scooch easier, but we think he's out of a more than ready mare. We waited all winter to get him back on the grass, so here's the opportunity to get going. And speaking of Gary's, we've got Gary Palmisano Jr. standing by. Good morning.
Good morning. How you doing? Welcome to Louisville.
Thanks very much. And we always get together and celebrate Derby, and typically we go over. And I would go over the betting menu. And the reason I thought to reach out to you, this actually is a few days earlier than we usually do it, but the news yesterday of a couple of new wrinkles. You guys are always working on something new and clever and different to add to the wagering menu.
Absolutely, Steve. You know, the pool sizes on Derby Day allow us to get a little creative, obviously. We don't have to worry about cannibalizing other pools and things of that nature. So what we're focused on is trying to give the option for horse players that have an opinion in a certain race to be able to string it together with different wagers throughout the day, whether it be in the numerous pick five pools on Derby Day itself, or some of these new wagers that allow a horse player that might love a horse in the American Turf to now be able to string that together with the Pat Day Mile and the Derby in a pick three, gives a person the opportunity to really try to hammer an opinion that's in a race on a day where you can make a lifetime score. And that's what we've been trying to do, is just focus on ways to allow, you know, people that have strong opinions in certain races to get paid.
The innovations, which go you know, into multi-race wagers, they feature the multi-race, multi-day wager concept. And then, you know, what is the probably the newest trend, which came out of a lot of focus group discussions, players committees, Breeders' Cup, NHC, you know, frankly, Paul Matisse, generally at the engine on the train, and these higher increment wagers, and that included you know, the $2 pick four, and now these $3 smaller multi-race sequences, pick threes essentially, that have turned up. Keeneland with the interesting turf wrinkle. Talk about the higher increment concept before we kind of waltz through the whole betting menu.
Yeah, absolutely. So we've obviously been tracking along with what Keeneland's doing and felt like their wager was very successful and got off the ground running. And actually Kevin Kirstein from our team, when we sat down to try to brainstorm new ideas, you know, he kind of brought up the idea of the $3 pick three here. And we wanted to think about what three races made sense, and the ability to have three races on Derby Day that are all three-year-old restricted races that are all very high-end, high-quality, usually very competitive betting fields with the American Turf, the Pat Day Mile, and, of course, the Derby. Felt like kind of an interesting tie-in of a $3, three-year-old, a pick three, a lot of ways to easily kind of remember exactly what races are involved in that. And you know, again, if you love a horse in the Pat Day Mile, you have the option to tie it together in this high-dollar, $3 pick three and hopefully score.
What kind of expectation when you, I mean, do you sit down and look at last year's pools and then estimate, you know, how much a pool like this could generate? And of course, you do have at least, you know, some background, you know, to look at. Stronach has done this as well with the Santa Anita Golden Gate, the Golden Hour concept with a higher increment as well. I mean, what are they showing? Because I tell you, I did read Chris Rossi had a very interesting tweet the other day, noting that the wrinkle, not the wrinkle, but let's call it the potential hiccup with this, is that a special wagering code has to be written for the platforms, and that it gets lost in translation on the you know, the left column wagering menus, and that it creates a scenario where players have to search out this, and that it isn't as readily, I suppose, for, you know, for Derby Oaks weekend, it may get more exposure and you know, may get more attention, and obviously us talking about it plants the seed in people's minds. But, you know, talk about what kind of a pool you would anticipate and what would be a, you know, a successful introduction.
Well, that's 100% the challenge with these wagers, is it is a special event code. So you will have to go seek out, you know, when you walk up to a wagering terminal or you log on to an ADW, it will say, you know, for example, $2 two-day pick six to highlight our $2 two-day pick six wager. So it is a wager designed more for a core audience. I mean, I totally don't expect, you know, that many novice players will be able to seek out the $3 pick three, but I think it's a wager that's sort of built for our core players, especially at the higher dollar increment. You know, when we looked at the pools for this year's Derby and talking about these wagers, I mean, the expectation for the pick three is a couple $100,000, $300,000-$400,000 would be really well. That sort of lines up with sort of the Oaks Old Forester Derby pick three, which is kind of in the same vein as the, you know, the $3 pick three, although the increment pricing difference will be something we'll study. The All Stakes All Dirt pick five was one that we looked back at past pools to try to model out what we thought we could do. There's four pick fives on Derby Day, and all four do over $1 million. So We wanted to obviously give people what we know they're playing, and they're playing pick fives on Derby Day. And so this is the pick five is just another opportunity for folks to tie in to some different high competitive races on Derby Day. But yeah, we're eager to see what they do, and hopefully we'll be able to focus horse players' attentions to all the different special wagers over the 2 days.
I'm about to send out a link to the full wagering menu, and there we go. There it is. I'll put the link up so that everybody can get familiar. And even though the only races that are officially positioned on the schedule currently are the Oaks, the Old Forester Turf Classic. I really should just stop using the bourbon of the moment and just call it the Turf Classic and the American Turf. I already did a riff on Crown Royal, which was a long time, right? For a long time, Crown Royal.
Long time.
Had the American Turf. There's no sponsor this year of the American Turf at all?
There is, but honestly, off the top of my head, I don't know what it is.
That's the problem.
They're all running together this time of year.
You have to, unless you're the Jim Beam Gallery Furniture Jeff Ruby Stakes Spiral, unless you're a race that had enough sponsors for a long enough period that we remember every single name, it becomes very difficult.
I'm with you.
But you do have, I can tell by this release, that you do have a general idea of and anybody that is familiar with the way Derby and Oaks days unfold, alternating turf and dirt races one after the other. So you can expect that the race before the Turf Classic, before the 11th on Saturday, is either going to be the girls' sprint or the Pat Day Mile.
Right. You're absolutely right. And we have to kind of play within certain parameters. There's all types of different things. What NBC's doing, what people have to cross the turf course to get to the infield for presentations, or, you know, all those things have to go into play when we set our race card. But to your point, exactly, the race before the Turf Classic will be a dirt race. It'll be dependent upon entries, but we're expecting the Pat Day Mile to be a full field. So, you know, if we were a betting man here, I'd say the Pat Day Mile has a very good chance of being that race. And the Derby City Distaff, obviously, with a couple of heavy hitters, probably won't draw 10, 12, or 14, so it'll probably shift to a little bit earlier in the card. But yeah, you're exactly right. We don't 100% know the set lineup until Monday at the draw. If there's a race that surprises us and sort of overflow field or something like that, we will, move things around and make sure that we can get the most competitive races. And it's, you know, in that when NBC comes on at 2:30 in the afternoon, we want to make sure we're hitting the best races that we can possibly show during that time frame.
You know, speaking of crossing the turf course, has the photographer been picked out yet? The one that will be the shadowy figure that will create controversy, that sneaks to a place on the behind a pole that becomes the major controversy yet?
I plead the fifth on that one.
how is that photographer selected? Is it a draw?
It's a luck of the draw.
It's one of the great storylines of the Maximum Security DQ is it's like the Zapruder tape, the shadowy photographer hiding behind the pole.
One of the great Derby stories of all time, in history,
like the fighting finish,
right? Exactly.
Right, and there's so many great controversies. Couple of other. I'm just looking here and seeing what else we can pick out. We should mention the 20 cent, the 20 cent, the Derby City Six.
Correct.
How did that perform?
It did well. So it's a mandatory payout again this year. So we feel like we have something for both sets of horse players.
Right.
So we have the $2 2 day pick six that starts on Friday. That is six grade one races. There's two grade ones on Friday, the La Troyenne and the Oaks, and then there's the four grade ones on Saturday. So feel like that gives sort of that $2 pick six player that traditionally look for big scores, the opportunity to dive into that 2 day pick six, which has, obviously some of the best races we have to offer. Which leads us into the 20-cent Derby City 6, which we have on both Oaks and Derby Day. And that allows, you know, sort of our casual audience to be able to string together a pick 6 ticket that's affordable on Derby Day. When you have a race that ends with 20 horses as competitive as the Kentucky Derby is, it helps some of our folks that aren't as, you know, big bankrolled as other players have the opportunity to play the pick 6. And so what will happen with the Derby City 6 is it'll build all throughout the first week. So the pick 6 pool will grow starting opening night through Derby Day, and it will pay out as a mandatory payout on Kentucky Derby Day. The pool last year did about $3.5 million, so something we were proud of, and that's obviously without, you know, any kind of big carryover. So, of course, with the Derby City 6, we have the 10% clause. So ours doesn't grow as quickly as some of the other jackpot pools. But what it does do is if no one has six of six in any day that week, the entire pool does carry over. So, you know, you could see a situation on Wednesday, Thursday, or even Oaks Day where if the entire pool were to carry over into Derby Day, that there would be quite a hefty carryover as part of a mandatory payout on Derby Day.
Very cool. Should also ask the obligatory question, and one of our listeners, Chad in Metairie.
Okay.
Wink, wink.
Yeah, gotcha.
is asking about the Superfecta scenario, and you know, we did have the luxury. The one positive of pandemic derbies was the ability to bet 10-cent supers. That has gone away again.
It is a really hotly contested debate, and it is amongst our own team here as we talk about it. There are folks that lean heavily toward the 10 cent, and there are folks that lean heavily toward the dollar. I will say some of the biggest feedback that we got were players that want the dollar Superfecta, that truly feel like, you know, the opportunity to have a $120,000 payout doesn't come around very often, and it does in the Derby. In the Derby Superfecta pool, especially when it's a dollar. You know, Dallas Stewart jumps in at 60-1 like he did a few years ago and triggers a six-figure payout. That is what a lot of our, you know, hardcore horse players are playing the game for those types of scores. And so, you know, we kicked it around again this year. But yeah, we opted for the dollar again. And, you know, I know people feel strongly both ways about it.
And explain again, I mean, the reason originally, the difficulty with the advent of 10-cent supers, given the crowd here, which will be back up to 160,000 plus, I mean, by the time these renovations are done, there will be 200,000 people on these grounds at some point, correct?
I don't know if we can get there, but we're going to try.
I will promise you at some point, and maybe it's 8 to 10 years down the road, this facility will accommodate 200,000. Every nook and cranny is being utilized magically.
We're maximizing space.
Oh my God, it's crazy! And with the first turn, it, you know, is an area that has always been, you know, moderately used, and yep. You know, then you fold in the, you know, the infield, the dead space, Baby Grand, you know, was a spot that, you know, now has been turned into really a Saratoga's done the same thing with, you know, the top of the stretch areas, yep, that otherwise go unused. You know, Derby Day's one thing, but the way they've now been, you know, employed, and then, you know, 8-seat tables in areas that otherwise, you know, wouldn't accommodate anybody would be completely dead space.
So exactly. We're absolutely maximizing space. And sure, the 10-cent supers on Derby Day is a challenge. Lines are long. Staffing is, obviously, everyone in the country is dealing with staffing issues. I know we wish we had a lot more mutual tellers than we're probably going to have. We're gonna have our usual number, but we were hopeful to overstaff. But, you know, things of that nature just come into play operationally on that day. And sure, listen, we know that the majority of the money is coming in, you know, online and things of that nature. So we took the lines with a grain of salt, and it was a factor. But at the end of the day, the most vocal folks were in the camp of the Dollar Super, and we sort of we felt like that gives them their chance to play the game how they want to play it. And there's also 50 cent tries and things of that nature that others can play throughout the day.
Just putting this up for everybody. There we go. The link to the section at ChurchillDowns.com, and I'm sure it's also at KentuckyDerby.com, but here are your, there it goes. There's your betting menu options. So you've got it in one place to get prepared in terms of, you know, budgeting. That, you know, that's an area that over the last, I don't know, I'd say 10 plus years, we've really tried to stress that you need a plan of attack. You need a blueprint. And understanding where these pick fives, for instance, where they are and what races are going to be incorporated, it's key. And you don't wake up on Oaks morning or Derby morning and you know, not have a feel for, you know, where your budget is going to be applied.
You're 100% correct, and we moved the post draw out to Monday just to kind of continue to allow horse players to do just that. You really do have to have a plan and have a budget in mind, and I think the Monday post draw gives an extra 24 hours for people to look at PPs and sort of understand exactly what their plan will be. And again, the plethora of pick fives, these multi-day wagers, these, you know, multi-sequence races that connect different races together that may or may not have been, you know, in one string of five races, really does allow a person to drill down on a couple of opinions throughout Derby Day and see if they can tie them together with other races that they feel like they can have the opportunity to do well in.
On that topic, actually, when you approach this, and it's something that we talk about more, maybe I won't say more at Breeders' Cup, but these 2 days are the closest parallel to Breeders' Cup, to the 2 days of Breeders' Cup in terms of field size and options. There is, especially if you have a limited budget, there is the school of thought that I have floated for ages to pare back, that if your budget is strained to any degree, if you play pick fives and pick fours, this is actually potentially one of those weekends where you cut back one layer. If you pick fives, play the pick fours. If you're a pick four player and your budget is strained, play pick threes. Even if you're a pick three player, and you can get away with 50 cent increments, and same thing with tries, you can get away with rolling pick threes, and we talk about the reverse try key concept for 50 cent tries, but play some doubles, because the difficulty factor. You as a player service, interface for Churchill, you talk to tons of players. We've gone through a sequence of Saturdays and these prep weekends,
right,
that have been shockingly chalky on a consistent basis. Last couple of weekends, we finally did get a couple of big prices, but for the most part, they've been unbelievably formful, and I don't want to suggest that people are, you know, going into a weekend like this overconfident and thinking, you know, why is this going to be any different? But I just by virtue of the full fields, of the big fields, you're almost guaranteed. I mean, I would go back and look at least the last 3-4 Oaks Derby weekends, go to chart archives and pull them up and print them out and look for the kind of flows that we've gotten. And that includes, I've made this point over the years, that even includes those early multi-race sequences where you've got some allowance races,
right,
that or listed stakes that then feed into the stakes portion. I've had Breeders' Cups where, you know, race 1-2 or 2-3 lead into two Breeders' Cup races and have scored with a goofy early pick four, for instance. But I think it's time well spent looking at, you know, what the ebb and flow is of these 2 days with, you know, with the kind of field sizes and also the, you know, the sheer number of races that we're looking at over the 2 days.
Yeah, you know, one of my challenges as a horse player is I like to play every race, and you just can't do that on Oaks and Derby Day. There's 14 races, there's, you know, big fields, there's competitive runners, so you really do have to look at both cards as a whole, and you really do have to try to find, to your point, opportunities where you feel like you have the most confidence and try to, you know, put the majority of your bankroll into those opinions, and hopefully it works out, but the idea that you can just string, you know, rolling pick threes together and play every single one all day, it's tough. Or if you're a smaller budget player, to your point, you cannot play all four pick fives on Derby Day. That's just not giving yourself, you know, kind of a fair chance to do well. So I think you're spot on. And I think if you go back and look, there are some races that have produced puzzling results more than others. You know, I know Jackie's Warrior won the Pat Day Mile last year, but when you think about Funny Duck winning at, you know, long odds, that Pat Day Mile is a race where sprinters are trying to stretch out, horses are turning back. So, you know, that type of race, and it's usually a 12 or 14 horse field, that's the kind of race, if you do, you know, what you're saying and you look back, you might see that's a race that might be worthy of taking a shot in and maybe using a couple extra horses. That are fringe horses or C's or whatever to, you know, as knowing that that's a race that produces some chaos sometimes.
Well, and the pick fives, as Gary's mentioning, we should note, first of all, 13 races on Oaks Day with the Oaks as the 11th and 14 on Derby Day with the Derby as the 12th. The big 2 day wager, of course, the granddaddy of 2 day wagers, the Oaks Derby Double, and then the second wrinkle, the Oaks Woodford Derby Pick Three, and of course we'll have Satish. We will have Satish with Satish offers up every year the Pick Three. That's one of his favorite wagers. The Pick Five scenario on Saturday starts in the first, in the third, in the seventh, and in the ninth. And, of course, the ninth is the one that would go right through the end of – that's actually Friday.
Friday, yeah.
You know, the two races after the feature both days. So on Saturday, the first, the fourth, the eighth, and the tenth will be your pick fives. And, you know, there is – both the pick five that ends with each day's feature and then the pick five that goes through the end of the card.
Yeah, people sleep on that last pick five, but usually has three good stakes with the Derby in, and then the two races after the Derby is kind of what you were saying earlier. There's usually a 1X or a maiden race that you can maybe have a lean on, you know, in those races. So don't sleep on the last five. I know staying up and, you know, hanging out for 14 races with us on Derby Day is a long day, but they've traditionally been in the past some horses in the two races after Derby that have been very impressive and horses that you could kind of lean on. So that's another opportunity to string together some competitive races with possibly a formful, you know, finale or something to that effect.
Well, and for instance, as we pull up last year, I'm gonna and you know, the last race of Derby Day. Apocryphally, has had, let's say, a storied history. That you know, for many years, it was always rumored that there was a horse that everybody at least you know, around from Taylor Boulevard to Crittenden. and from Central to Longfield knew, the neighborhood knew about a horse that was going to run well on the last race of Derby Day.
The get-out race.
The get-out race for the entire neighborhood. But the last couple of years, you did have last year in that allowance after the Derby, Supremacy for Brad Cox at almost 14-1.
Yeah, just looking at that chart, Prime Factor was a favorite, a horse that I thought people could ultimately lean on. That was a Pletcher that had been under, you know, Derby consideration. So obviously didn't work out. But again, would that late pick five pay there?
The last pick five?
Yeah.
Paid $20,862.
With a $1.5 million pool, so don't, you know, like I said, don't. There's opportunities all throughout the day. You really have to look at the card in its whole, in its entirety, and then sort of back into your opportunities that make the most sense.
Well, and notably, we should also I've completely forgotten this. We had had the dead heat. We'd had the dead heat in the Forster.
I had too. So, 20,000 twice if you had them.
Unbelievable. It started, and in fact, it started with the Churchill Downs Stake Flagstaff at 5-1. Then there was the dead heat. Colonel Liam was 3-2. Domestic Spending was 6-1. And I mean, for those of us that singled Domestic Spending, it was a tough win.
Yeah.
You were right. So, if you did, like many of us, I know I did, single Domestic Spending, you felt so fortunate because he was a chicken in a pot at the top of top of the stretch and mid stretch. The fact that Pratt got him to the wire at the same time as Colonel Liam was miraculous. Medina Spirit was 12-1. Then Supremacy, 13.70-1. And then second choice, or third choice, Mr. Sippy for Joe Sharp. That's right. The Run Happy for the Butts House, who will be in this year's Derby with the very likable Zozos. And, so with a dead heat, unbelievable, with a dead heat, $20,800. The pick four paid $1,900.
But all those races sort of... closing the day out, or sort of, those pools are sort of an afterthought. Everyone dives into the all stakes as they should. You know, the pick fours and pick fives that end on the Derby are the big plays that people zone in on. But I feel like people sleep on those late wagers here and there.
Well, and to also give you a feel for the early part of the card before even anything starts, how about what Mark Cassey authored when Ali Diva won that maiden turf race and paid $80. You had a $20 winner in Ram. Lucas frequently shows himself prominently in these kinds of races. That was that Nice American Pharaoh Ridgeling. Paid $20.80 in the first, $79.40 for Ali Diva, then $11.40 for Cool House. That's Cox, right? Yeah, that's a Cox horse. That was a maiden race. Then First Premio. Here's Cassie again at 12:40, and then Masked Parade, the very popular Al Stahl for Governor Jones, that won the allowance at 4-1 with poor late Miguel Mena. And that early pick five, $99,627.
Absolutely, opportunities all day. So, don't find your opinions and give it your best swing.
Almost a $5,000 pick four, and again to mention that pick three scenario. How about a $696 pick three, races 2, 3, and 4?
And going back to Chad and Metairie, one of his theories, as I know he's probably discussed with you, is he takes all in the turf races and tries to handicap the dirt races. And, you know, I think it's important for horse players to pay attention to Churchill Downs early in the week to see what the turf course does. It's a brand new turf course.
That's a good point.
The first couple turf races will be Saturday night. I don't have any, anticipation of how it's going to play. The jocks and the riders and the folks that have galloped over it absolutely love it. They say it has a great bounce to it, but you know, the opportunities for chaos in the turf course, you know, I think people had a mindset of how it used to play. The rail was out, speed was good, you know, whatever. All that goes out the window this year with what is a brand new surface. So I think it's important to watch throughout the week how the turf course plays as we get into to the two big days.
Well, just eager to get these fields assembled by Monday, and then we'll be able to start to structure and start to build. Let me ask as well, Gary, since we haven't had this discussion, and I suppose you would have reached out if it was happening, but you guys had such a tremendous success with Warriors Club and with the introduction of the Churchill Downs Racing Club, and it fostered, you know, basically a brush fire around the industry with racetracks across the country introducing, you know, the simple buy-in concept. And, of course, now there's also the proliferation of the micro-share concept. Is the club on hiatus, or is there thoughts of bringing one back?
So we did two last year. We have a horse with Brad Cox and a horse with Tommy Drury that are going to be three-year-olds this year and running. We did not do one this year. You know, I think at the end of the day, there's more opportunities for people. When we started this thing in 2016, these sort of micro-share opportunities weren't really prevalent. And now that they're kind of everywhere, I think the racing club probably takes a little bit of a back seat as some of those other folks just, you know, have a wider reach and a bigger gain. And you know, to be quite honest, it was a lot of time and a lot of energy that, you know, I put into it, our team put into it. So we might revisit it, but at the moment we're going to ride out these last couple horses and see if we can drum up some more luck. And Warriors Club's doing great, obviously being the poster boy for the club. We sent him as well as a hefty donation to the Thoroughbred Retirement Foundation, the TRF, so he's got a forever home. We've been in the process of seeking out and retiring the other racing club horses that have been claimed for us or whatnot. So we've had a great run with the club and have two more horses that'll be here at Churchill Downs this spring, and we'll see what we can do.
Nice. I didn't realize that there was an active nice. I mean, the you could not have written that script with Warriors Club if you tried.
You're 100% correct, and I think the folks quickly realized the game is not that easy when the next few came along. That didn't quite work out the same way, but that was a once-in-a-lifetime experience. And you know what? The proudest thing we are at Churchill Downs is we've created multiple hundreds of owners. It's so much fun, and they all reach out to me all the time. There's a group of six or seven guys that got together and went and bought a horse at a racing age sale, and they won here at Churchill Downs. The horse got claimed, so they made a little money. They were fired up. The stories are endless as to the club members coming together and doing their own thing or joining other syndicates, and that's what it was all about. It was all about introducing people to Thoroughbred ownership and making sure that we could provide them a good experience and hopefully transitioning them into real life actual owners, and we did that 100+ times over.
Well, and then one of the nice codas to the whole Warriors Club story, the fact that he is just up the road at the TRF's incredible sanctuary farm at Chestnut Hill, which was established by Bill Carstangen. And we learned, of course, that in Dutch, Carstangen means chestnut.
Okay. I did not know that.
That's awesome. Why it's Chestnut Hill.
Okay. I learned something. So his farm out there is a great opportunity, and they're doing tours and things of that nature. We've since moved Warriors Club to the facility in Lexington that the TRF has for the retired prison, or for the prison. I totally am drawing a blank on the name. Blackburn.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
So they have the prison facility in Lexington that are teaching those folks how to handle horses.
Sure.
And Warriors Club is able to get much more hands-on treatment over there. He He came off the track a little rambunctious. He ran through one of Bill's fences and almost ended up on the road out there 42. So we had to send him to the jail to learn his manners a little bit more. So actually, the folks over there, it's a tremendous program that the TRF has over there, and they are very, very hands-on. That program has produced numerous folks that have gone on to,
sure,
to work for other thoroughbred trainers and in the industry. And so what he's allowed to do over there is be a little bit of a teaching tool for those folks and to get a little bit more hands-on activity, get walked every day a few times, be out in the paddock and run around. He didn't. He wasn't ready to retire. So
no, it can happen.
We went over there for a visit. The racing club was gonna go see him at Chestnut Hall over there, and we had Wayne come out, and I'm pretty sure Wayne would have brought the van over
and put him back
after seeing him run through the field a few times. So we had to get Wayne and Warriors Club out of there.
That's funny. That is funny.
He was doing great over there, but he just wasn't ready for that setting. So
unbelievable. Well, also we should let you provide a plug for all the activities Twin Spires related.
Yeah, looking forward to a great Derby from the Twin Spires front. Obviously, tons of offers and different promotions that are going on TwinSpires.com all throughout the week. I think I saw Hit It and Split It starting opening night on the Pick 5. Tons of sign-up opportunities and new player bonuses and things of that nature. So Twin Spires will obviously be heavily involved in most of the marketing efforts throughout Derby week. So we're looking forward to a great week.
Are you able to examine through geo-tracking the on-track use of the app and the platform versus, are you able to equate essentially, you know, how much is being bet on site through Twin Spires versus through the windows?
We can if you're attached to our Wi-Fi. So if you're here in our facility on our Wi-Fi, we have the IP addresses linked to where we can sort of ping down, you know, who's here playing on site via the Twin Spires app. But of course, we don't know what other ADWs are here, people playing on, and things of that nature. It's something we've looked at, and it's growing, obviously. And you know, we've worked together with our Horseman group to make sure that everybody's, you know, equally taken care of is from that nature. So we want the app to be something that's usable because it is so user friendly. And what we notice is, you know, people come out here, they have a good day, and they leave here with money in their account, and they go to dinner and they think about the Santa Anita late double and things of that nature. So, you know, when you leave here with cash in your pocket after the day, you tend to go to Lowe's and buy some new furniture or whatever.
Well, that's an element that I stress for people. When you hit a $99,000 pick five, don't just use the money, you know, for buy yourself something that
is
going to be a permanent or at least a long running, whether it's a car or something that is permanent, that always can be a touchstone to that moment for you.
Every time my wife goes in our renovated master bedroom, she thinks the Gulfstream everywhere.
That's pretty funny. You should put a nameplate like on the belt.
Up. Yeah,
there you go. You should put it right on the bedpost.
There you go. No, exactly. But yeah, no, we're, you know, Twin Spires is obviously a heavy partner of Churchill Downs, which it should be, and we have a lot of fun things going on throughout the week on the app and on the website. So, as well as our you know, expert picks, Scott Schaap, I think on all week doing videos of his expert picks throughout Derby week. So,
well, we'll have Schaap and Scully here tomorrow. James is coming out.
Great.
And so we'll have the two of them on a regular basis. I want to get Brandon Staubel in as well next week for some physical evaluation. And Gary, as always, greatly appreciate the review. And I see already people bookmarking and favoriting and retweeting, etc., with the specifics of how the betting menu unfolds. use it as a blueprint, get familiar, and understand where you're going to apply your bankroll. And as always, a pleasure.
Great to see you.
Gary Palmisano Jr., who, of course, you should be following on Twitter. Gary Pal Jr. Gary, G-A-R-Y, P-A-L Jr., Gary Palmisano, everybody who takes care of all the big players here. And he'll, if you need anything, tweet right out to him, right? I appreciate it. There it is, Gary Palmisano. Let's do this. Casey, let's take our break. We got Tony and we've got Joe Clancy yet to come. Brandon Lee is going to join us from Lone Star. It's their opening day as well as Belmont's. As the spring, I'm sure it's warmer in Texas than it is in New York. So we'll check in with Brandon and more. I'm also going to take the opportunity to see if we've got, let's see, what time is it out west? 7:25. All right. I'll see. I'm going to check in with Gary Young and find out about Taba's work. And we also have to look at the, I probably should have done that. I probably should have taken these 5 minutes to look at the Keeneland and so forth. We'll fit it in. Second half, live at Churchill. Back after this.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Bick.
The Belmont Stakes returns to Belmont Park Saturday, June 11th. Tickets to the top of the stretch, the premier trackside picnic area with personal grills are almost sold out. Tickets to the test of the champion are on sale at BelmontStakes.com. Hurry before it's gone.
The Ponds family's Country Life and Maryland Farms are the place for breeding and racing in the Mid-Atlantic. Country Life is nationally recognized for making stallions and currently stands the Mid-Atlantic's leading first and second crop sires, Divining Rod by Tappan and Mosler by Warfront, as well as Frisian Fire. Maryland's 5/8 mile training track completes the full service facilities from the folding barn to the racetrack. Join the excitement of racing with Country Life Farm, where our partnerships can take you from beginning to winning. Learn more at CountryLifeFarm.com.
Association introduces the Pennsylvania Stallion Series. Four brand new races to be run at Parks for PA-sired, PA-bred two-year-olds. There are two $100,000 contests on August 22nd, PA Day of the Races. September 24th, PA Derby Day, has two more races, each with a $200,000 purse. The PA Stallion Series, yet another reason why Pennsylvania is the premier place to breed and race. For more, please visit PABred.com.
Get your career in horse racing off to a fast start? Well, the University of Arizona's Racetrack Industry Program is your winning ticket. The Racetrack Industry Program has served as a springboard to some of the industry's most successful individuals, with a proven track record of job placement right out of college. If you want to earn a degree in the exciting horse racing industry, the Racetrack Industry Program can put you in the winner's circle.
Visit ua-rtip.org today.
Why, in the past decade, has BRL Equine become the premier equine supplement company in the industry? Because we spend millions in research and development before we ever put out a product. Because we use only FDA-supervised facilities to manufacture for us. Because what we say is in them, is in them. Because they work.